Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to be talking about the Billy Meier case this evening and afternoon, depending on what part of the world you're in. Billy Meier is in his late 70s. He's almost 80 years old. He lives in Switzerland. He grew up in northern Switzerland in Bulac, near a place called the Glab Valley. Now he lives in a place called Schmidrutti, which is about 52 minutes east or 45 minutes east of Zurich by automobile. He has had a very interesting life. Starting back when he was 5 years old, he met first with a man named Spock. For 11 years. Foth was an extraterrestrial human from a world called Era. And Era exists not only in another solar system, but in a solar system that's in a different space-time configuration than we exist in. We sometimes use the word dimension to kind of describe what that means. I don't think here on Earth we really completely understand what our universe is like. And part of the Meier information is passing on to us what our universe is like and what it's all about. Even before Billy met with Svoth, he had his own internal revelation on a mild night in May in 1941. He went outside and he sat down on the bench and he looked up at this beautiful starry night and he heard a voice in his head that said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." Now, what is creation? Creation, you could call the universal consciousness. It's not a heavenly father. It radiates love. It creates this universe. It has created this universe because of its quest for evolution. And as the Talmud of Emmanuel says, the creation is not perfect. It's evolving. And that's one of the reasons the Meier information doesn't use the word God, because the idea of the term God is not a real term. It's something the people of Earth and probably on other worlds as well have made up. The universal consciousness, the universe seems perfect, but it's not. I'll give you some examples. Animals have to kill each other in order to survive. And I would point this out as a imperfection of creation. But there's great beauty in creation. In fact, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And one of the questions that Billy has gotten in the past in his interviews is, what is love really? And let me read to you what Billy has said. He says, you can quote from what I have written, "Love is the absolute certainty that oneself co-lives and coexists in everything that exists, in fauna and flora and the fellow human being, in each and every material and spiritual life form of any kind, and in the existence of the entire universe and beyond. Therefore, love is not just thoughts and feelings, but true love is this spiritual, fine, sensitive feeling that directly originates from the gamut. The gamut is the part of your spirit form that controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spirit form." And Billy is talking about that love is a spiritual, fine, sensitive feeling that originates from the gamut. Let me read in chapter 32 of the book, The Psyche. It says, am finding, this is this fine sensitive feeling, is a purely spiritual process of the spiritual gemut, and this does not belong to the physical body. The Empfinden only receives swinging waves, which are of a purely spiritual nature, and thus in the spiritual sense of a neutral positive form. The Empfindungen are as manifold as the feelings, except the Empfindungen are simply pure and are of only neutral positive equalized form. The Empfindung not only influences the entire spiritual mentality block, but it also works across into the material realm, and indeed directly to the half-material psyche as one of the many basic factors of feeling origination. Empfindungen can solely and exclusively occur in the spiritual realm. So this whole idea of love is really more profound than we think. We think of love as this romantic notion that exists. That's the false love. True love is a purely spiritual thing that originates in the spiritual realm, in this gemut, this area that controls the thoughts and feelings of the spiritual consciousness. Remember, you have a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. Your spiritual consciousness is the part of you that will last basically forever. So Billy asks the question, and what are the human beings on Earth usually doing? They build a form of thought and feeling related love through their thoughts and feelings, which is often not permanent. And this false form of love, Billy goes on to explain here, it says they marry, they are together, and then after a few weeks, months, or years, everything falls apart. They divorce, get into quarrels, beat each other up. And under certain circumstances, there is even murder, manslaughter, or whatever. So Billy's talking about this affective love. It's called a false love, and it's a feeling-related love. It's based on thoughts and feelings. It's not what makes real true love. Real true love is internally perceived. And it comes from the spiritual realm, where things are transformed from the spirit realm in an internally perceived way into the consciousness in the psyche. Well, why would we look at this? Why would we talk about this? Well, right now, the world is in turmoil because it doesn't understand the creation. It doesn't understand these creational natural laws like love, which love, again, is the certainty of this coexistence. It's a knowledge of the oneness of the universe. Billy describes it in really beautiful ways. He says the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So creation doesn't express itself in words. It could never put its concepts down into words in a book, because if it did, it would have to undermine itself. It would have to compromise its wisdom. So what it does is it expresses its love through the incredible splendor of nature, and this constant radiation of this wisdom and this love is emanating from nature. But it takes a certain awareness to pick up on that radiating love of creation. And because we're disconnected from creation, we're disconnected from these concepts that I'm talking about, we have accepted false forms of love. We've gotten involved in religious concepts, and religious concepts have caused a great separation here on our planet. For example, Billy's been asked, is there a heaven? And he answers, there is a sky as we see it. Not the ethereal heaven in that sense. If one talks about heaven, the human beings are usually seeing it from a religious angle. I.e. that somewhere a dear God lives and angels. And this heaven, Billy says, does not exist. He says this is an illusion. This heaven is based on religion. And angels also are the product of religious assumption. And there are no angels in that way that the religions say. He goes on here and he says, in ancient times, the angels were simply called messengers. But then the religions came, the faithful people, and called them angels. But an angel translated into German and any other language means no other thing than a messenger. In ancient times, when certain extraterrestrials still came to the earth, they were called guardian messengers, guardian and messenger at the same time. The guardian angels don't exist either. This is an invention of the religions and inventions of the sects. Each guardian angel exists only in the human being himself. And Billy goes on to describe how we are, in a sense, our own guardian angel, because we have quick reactions to certain things, subconsciously, unconsciously, like pulling off of a hot burning stove and things like that. So we have many misconceptions in our religions, and many misconceptions in our philosophies. And this has caused a lot of the problems that we see. And one of the things that's going on right now is a big conflict in France, and we've seen the movement of Islamic religion into France, and now we have this big cultural upheaval. So I want to play a clip, hopefully, on some of the stuff that's going on in France, and then we can discuss it from the terms of the Meyer prophecy. So here we go.
Truck has rammed into a crowd during Bastille Day celebrations in the French city of Nice. At least 10 people are believed to have been killed and many more are injured, we understand. Eyewitnesses do say that people inside the truck opened fire before hitting the crowd. These are the latest pictures we've received.
Moment and people were out to watch fireworks in France's resort city of Nice, where everything happened at the Promenade des Anglais. People have eyewitnesses report that they've heard gunshots, but it's difficult to say so far because, as I've already mentioned, fireworks were going off as well. We know so far that a truck indeed seemed to have rammed into a crowd of these people that were out to watch the fireworks and celebrate Bastille Day. And so far, reports are coming in that people are now attending to the injured, and so are the authorities as well.
At the moment yet, Anya, if the attackers are still at large, or there's no sort of clearer picture of exactly what happened, basically, when they attacked.
Okay, so we're starting to see the prophecies fulfilled again, the Meyer prophecies fulfilled in France. Let me read from the Henoch prophecies, which tells us what's going to happen with France. Well, son of a gun. Okay, I have it in my outline here. Okay. France will not only be invaded by the aggressors from the outside, but will also be conquered from within as a result of collaborative forces and other forces. This can be envisioned as being the many foreigners of a different religion living in France at the time, specifically Islam, which will be the force working from within. Once France has fallen a war to conquer Spain and England will take place. Subsequently, an alliance with the forces of the aggressors will be formed, which will invade Scandinavia. So there's going to, we're going to see a lot of things happen. Probably the next thing that happens is France will fall. And if I hope the Meyer information is wrong, believe me, it sounds kind of strange from a guy that talks about the Billy Meyer case this much, but I really hope that many, many of these prophecies don't occur because they're not good. These are not good things happening by any means. I have another clip here on this attack that took place in France not long ago.
Horror tonight in the French resort town of Nice.
It was sheer terror.
A truck turned lethal weapon, plowing through a crowded promenade, killing at least 80 people, including children, and wounding more than 65, according to French authorities.
I was looking for a place to hide. It was running.
I did see it hit a few people, and there were a few people lying on the ground.
All across France, fireworks lighting up the skies to celebrate France's national holiday, Bastille Day. And in Nice.
People were just enjoying the music, beautiful ambiance. It was amazing. People were having fun, and so many people were there.
And there must have been thousands of people watching this show.
But just after midnight in Nice, screams of terror and panic.
So we started running. See a lot of people ducking, looking for doorways, places to hide. There's another sound, shooting in the air. And so then we go into a nearby restaurant and hide in an alleyway that we could get to from the back of it.
Nice is the gateway to the French Riviera, a ritzy tourist destination for Americans and Europeans. Sam Jones was visiting from the UK.
We saw thousands of people running towards us.
He was exiting a waterfront hotel when he says he first noticed something was wrong.
They're all screaming and everyone was running in every direction. Seconds later, this giant white van came bolting down this road. It was just taking out people left, right and center. We began to run because everyone was frantically running because we had no idea what was actually happening.
Another eyewitness, Jimmy Gazal, describing the chaos.
I heard loud noises and people started screaming and shots being fired up in the air. And everyone started running in different parts.
Authorities say that truck was loaded with guns and grenades. The driver speeding through crowds for more than a mile, shooting a firearm out the window.
When we were running away, apart from all the screaming, that we did hear shots fired, which I assume to be the police.
The driver was shot by police after an exchange of gunfire. The bullet-riddled windshield, evidence of the carnage.
So the Meyer material says that France will fall. It will be because of an invasion from the outside, but also because of the people from the inside, from Islam that don't want to see a France anymore. Let's read a little bit from the Henoch prophecies that talk about France and give us a little more information. I'll try to fill in a little bit of the details here quickly. It says again, France will not only be invaded by aggressors from the outside, but will also be conquered from within as a result of collaborative forces and other forces. This can be envisioned as being the many foreigners of a different religion living in France at that time, specifically Islam, which will be the force working from within. Once France has fallen, a war to conquer Spain and England will take place. Subsequently, an alliance with the forces of the aggressors will be formed, which will invade Scandinavia. Then it talks about weapons of mass destruction stored in the arsenals of France will be used, and it goes on and on here. This is just horrible, horrible news, horrible things that look like they're going to take place. I'm not a huge fan of the Meyer prophecies just because they're so devastating. They're so overwhelming, and it looks like the people of the earth may have to learn the hard way. So let me move on a little bit here. I want to talk a little bit about the Talmud of Emmanuel. There is a new Talmud of Emmanuel coming out, because if you read through the old one, there's a lot of poorly translated things. Particularly the word God appears a lot, where we're probably really should say Ishwish in many of these passages. So I wanted to read to you something about the human spirit. It says here, just as creation is one within itself, however, so is all life, being and existence, one within itself. It is by the law of creation that all humans, plants, animals, and all life are one in themselves. A person may believe that everything is two or three, but this is not so, because everything is one. Whatever people believe to be two or three is actually one. So they should make everything that is two or three into one. Since the spirit in a person is a part of creation, it is one with creation. Consequently, it is not two. And since the body is a part of the spirit and in a different form or matter, it is therefore one with the spirit, and consequently, it is not two. The teachings state that there is a unity and not in any way or form a duality or a trinity. So amazing. The body and the spirit are one. And it says that the body is a part of the spirit and it's a different form and matter. And I was listening a little bit today from some of the notes on creation. And it says that matter, we say coarse matter, like a tabletop or a cup, is really just a energy that's been compressed a certain way. Now, the Pleiarim won't tell us, of course, how to create matter, but evidently they know how. And they say that matter, physical matter, is just spiritual energy compressed. And that kind of makes sense. If it says here, and since the body is a part of the spirit in a different form of matter, is therefore one with the spirit. The body is a part of the spirit in a different form of matter. Amazing thing. Now the spirit, we all have a spirit. The spirit is probably what you could call the real you. It has lasted many lifetimes. If you're a typical spirit form on the earth, you've lived already about 5 million years in different physical bodies over different lifetimes. I would guesstimate that we reincarnate about once a century, because there's a certain amount of time in the physical and a certain amount of time in the spiritual. And with a life of 70 or 80 years now, and we probably spend about 30 years in the spirit realm before we reincarnate again. Now, we ought to be spending about 150 years in the spirit realm before we reincarnate. But because of overpopulation, spirit forms tend to come back a little too soon. And that leads me to believe that we leave some unfinished business in the spiritual realm. Because one of the things that the spirit form does in the spirit realm is it absorbs the essences of the wisdom that you got from your last life. And that spirit then gets stronger and more knowledgeable because of absorbing the essences of love and wisdom and all the virtues that you evolved during your previous lifetime. So I would think maybe the spirit comes in, when it comes in a little too soon, it isn't as strengthened as it usually would be. And one of the things the Meyer material talks about is when spirit forms come in too soon, they have a difficulty being male for one thing. And the other problem that happens is they tend to depend on parents a little too much. So, and these are some of the weird side effects that occur because of overpopulation. The overpopulation affects the spirit realm as well as the material realm. And let me talk a little bit, just briefly, about overpopulation and what you might call exponential growth. And exponential growth is something that occurs in certain populations, and it causes big problems. So let's say you had a population of cattle, and the cattle were on a field, 4 or 5 acres, and you had 2 cattle, and then the cattle multiplied. Say the population is doubling every year. So you go 2 cattle, then you have the next year, you have 4 cattle, then the next year you have 8 cattle, and then the next year, year 4, you have 16 cattle. Year 5, you have 32 cows. Now, 32 cows, if you got like a 5-acre field, are starting to get a little crowded and probably starting to destroy your field. Well, the next year, going from year 5 to year 6, that population will double again. Then you have 64 cattle on 5 acres. Now you have destruction and chaos. And you didn't even really necessarily realize how much trouble you're in. Well, that's the kind of thing that's going on with the earth right now. And because of overpopulation, we're destroying the earth in many areas. One of the things we're destroying is the forests, and the forests moderate the weather. And that's why we're having extreme weather. The other thing that's happening is what's affecting, like I said earlier, spirit forms. They don't come out of the spirit realm as prepared for the next material life as they should be. So there are multiple problems, physical and spiritual, that are related to overpopulation. And the manifestation is the chaos that is going on in France right now. The chaos that's going all along with the fires. I was going to talk about the Cold Springs fire today, but that didn't quite work out. So, has this kind of thing happened before? Well, yes, in a way it did. About 150,000 years ago, there was a man named Pelagon who elected himself a leader of about 70,000 human beings. And they came from, I believe, Era during this time. And they landed on the Earth. They took all these great spacer ships. He was an important scientist, and they settled on the Earth, and he was a king of wisdom. Now, he was a good leader, and he created a highly developed culture on Earth. And they built a great many cities, and they inhabited all the continents of the Earth. And the civilization of Pelagon lasted about 10,000 years. And everything went pretty well. Now, when Pelagon died, the next leader that took over wasn't as quite as well a good leader as Pelagon was. And then there was a world war that occurred. Now, Wendell Stevens, in his translations of the Maya material, describes the war during the time of Pelagon as, "There happened an earthly world war of measure like never before nor till today was brought upon the earth. And only a few thousand people escaped the destruction and fled in spaceships deep into the cosmos where they settled on other worlds." So about 150,000 years ago, there was a great society that advanced. This was before Atlantis and Lemuria, that built up great cities, inhabited all the continents of the earth, the society lasted 10,000 years, and then they eventually destroyed themselves. Well, there was about 7,000 years where the small group of people that remained on the destroyed earth were degenerated. These people degenerated. They lost their civilization. They lost their history. Their lifespan started to get shorter and shorter and shorter. They lost their technology. And they forgot who they were. They forgot where they came from. And they were just struggling to survive. And about 7,000 years later, people that had fled the earth before came back. And they returned to find people on the earth. They were very wild and degenerated. And the people that returned built up Greater Atlantis and Mu. And they were led by this king of wisdom named Atlant. He was married to a woman named Caryatide. And Atlant was a man of obvious Lyrian descent, broad-shouldered, white-skinned. And they created this beautiful city that was on an island continent that was located somewhere in between what we would call South America and Africa, and maybe in the center as well, closer to the equator. So another man came to the earth who built up Lemuria. And Lemuria was near what we call today the Gobi Desert. And below Lemuria, underground cities, Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta. And they were connected by these underground tunnels. And the peace lasted on the earth for about 2,000 years. What I'm trying to say here is the cycle of destruction of societies has occurred before on the earth. And now we're falling into that same cycle of destruction. Now we can stop it, but it really depends on getting information out about the spiritual life, about what creation is all about. And for example, the people that stirred up the Great War during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria were scientists. That event occurred about 133,000 years ago. And these people, they developed a great hatred, and they developed a very long lifespan. They came back to the earth under the leadership of a man named Eris the Barbarian, who was a very advanced scientist. And there was a great scientist named Semyasa who came with Eris, who mated with an earth woman. And that offspring they called Adam. Semyasa is mentioned in Contact 191 in reference to some of the problems that occurred on the earth in the ancient past. We've talked about Atlantis attacking Mu or Lemuria with all their spacecraft. They had like a 4.83 million people in their army. They had 123,000 ships. They destroyed Mu, and a few of the remaining Lemurians brought this great meteor back to the earth. And as I've talked about this before, the meteor, which was a part of the destroyed planet Melona, and they guided it back to the earth. When it got into our atmosphere initially, there was this unbearable howling sound and a fantastic heat that come from the asteroid, and it exploded at about 172 kilometers high into many smaller thousands of meteors. And the largest parts of that asteroid crashed into the Atlantic Ocean like two titanic fists. And the destruction on the Earth was pretty massive. Again, another advanced society that completely wiped itself out. So we have a heck of a challenge, because two societies, Pelagon Society and Atlantis and Lemuria, completely wiped themselves out. And they were more advanced than we are. Now, so we don't want to follow in their footsteps, at least in that way. And one of the things that happens with people is when their life starts to go astray, is they start, and they don't realize it necessarily, but they start living a life that's not in sync with these certain creational natural laws. I talked briefly about love, the fact that the primary creational natural law is love, and that love is not affective love, not the love based on romantic notions, but it's an effective love that's wisdom conditioned. Well, there's also another creational natural law that deals with striving. And in order to stay on top of life, you have to continue to strive. That's work. Whatever your occupation is in life, you really need to focus on it. And you also need to focus on certain other aspects of your life that help you to evolve. To be without striving, and let me read a little bit what the Meyer material says about striving. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life. But inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution and stagnation, hopelessness and grief, confusion, irrationality, joylessness, cognitionlessness, unpeace, disharmony, lovelessness, resentment, lies, self-deceit, and reluctance. Depending on the degree of the strength of the striving of any single wisen, it will assert itself in the world and prevail, or will fail, shatter, waste away, and come to an end and vanish. So striving is critical for your happiness, for your health, for your well-being. If you continue striving, let me read it somewhat, another passage here about striving. It says, "May the human being striving and will always be directed onto the path of the duty and its fulfillment, as well as at the evolution, so that the sense of life prospers and the self-responsibility is practiced and fulfilled to the last iota." So the striving is so critical. Without striving, we fall into all sorts of chaos in our life. Another important concept that I want to bring out is talked about in the Might of Thoughts, which is the idea of optimism. Difficult to be optimistic sometimes, that's for sure. Optimism in connection with this explanation does not mean behavior which is, for example, typical of a harlequin or one who fools about, or of an extremely jolly person or a Pollyanna, a carefree person, one bursting with hope, one bursting with confidence, or an enthusiast, and so forth. In fact, that which is meant is the kind of optimistic behavior which enables a human being to see and acknowledge the clear truth, and even in the rotten situation, to realistically observe and consider the very worst and nonetheless recognize the best and direct his or her striving at that in order to allow the good and evolutive things to become reality, and in order also with him or her to make them real himself. Thus, an optimist is therefore no clown or other comical figure. Rather, here she is a human being who, under the greatest pressure, remains consciously hopeful and happy, and who, in defiance of all blows, breakdowns, and deplorable state of affairs, and so forth, always retains the upper hand and the sense and the conviction for that which is good and for that which is best. Furthermore, optimism represents a quality which fascinates all human beings and which every single human being would certainly like to call his or her own. And the human being for whom optimism is characteristic has, under the most unusual circumstances and situations, the power to not only form his or her life correctly, rather also to enchant it and not just allow it to appear better than it is. So anyway, true optimism, is something that can continue through difficult and very, very trying times. So, and I think we are certainly potentially facing some very, very difficult and trying times. Now, I started giving a brief overview of Billy and his lifetime. And Billy, like I said earlier, he grew up in Bulak, Switzerland, which is in northern Switzerland. And he had great insight at a very, very young age. He was aware of the idea of creation and the idea of the importance of the love of creation. And it's said when Billy was looking up at the beautiful sky there and at 3 a.m. that one morning in Switzerland, he also heard his own lips say, "Since ancient times, you have lived among the stars." So Billy, his spirit form, is very, very ancient, and they call it Nokedamion, and it's been a teacher on other worlds. It's also incarnated on the earth as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And each one of these lifetimes, he taught this universal ancient teaching called the teaching of the spirit. And one of the things the teaching of the spirit talks about is creation, the universal consciousness, which is not a heavenly father. It's not a god. It radiates love, and the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of its radiating love. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And only the humans, we here, the human beings, we can turn away from love. And we are in a time which Svath told Billy about. It's called the third millennium. And in the time of the third millennium, there will be an epic of great destruction and annihilation, which will start, and it did start, with the criminal conduct of the people of the United States who dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, the teaching that Billy brings will eventually help us to understand that everything in the entire universe is one, and it's all bound together. The oneness and the connectedness with all life and all everything is the result of the might and the immeasurable love of creation. The invisible love of creation is hidden. It connects all life, because in all life that love lies hidden. And the biggest problem of humanity is our ignorance concerning creation and its laws and recommendations. Now, Contact 31 was very, very interesting because Billy went on the Great Mothership and he had an extended series of hyperleaps where they were jumping from star to star, and he started to experience the oneness of creation. In Contact 31, it says, this is the stage of the great unity and the oneness. And here, all the self and all the personality is overcome. The consciousness is the call of the eternity and the eternal call of the truth and the all-embracing love. And what can be greater than it? Because everything is born out of it. Everything was born out of the oneness of creation, which was like a big bang initially. So evidently understanding this oneness of creation is very difficult, I think, for us. Because, you know, what happens is as we climb up from these lower evolutionary levels, from primitive life, and now we're in real life, and we're climbing up into intelligent life. You know, what happens in primitive life is we're still involved in the imperfection of creation. And what do I mean by that? Because, you know, creation is evolving too. And the system that's set up, the system of striving, is not perfect. And, you know, you have to kill to survive. And animals have to kill to survive. And that kind of goes in conflict with the law of love. So creation is not perfect. It's evolving. And as humanity evolves, we come out of primitive life and what happens? Well, we don't kill as much. We're not supposed to. And we start to, you know, understand how creation works, and we learn agriculture, and eventually we'll be able through chemistry to develop meat so we don't have to kill animals at all. And that's the beauty of evolution. But we've had things interrupt our evolution on the earth. And because we have had extraterrestrial intervention, and these interventions both hurt us and helped us, probably more hurt us because now we have erroneous ideas which exist in our religions mostly. Now, the Pleiaren left the Earth in 1995, and they revealed their true identity then. They live some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. They're in a different space-time configuration. Between 75 and 86, the extraterrestrials were here on the Earth, and there were three extraterrestrial bases with locations in Asia and North America and Switzerland. And the base in Switzerland had been here for over 300 years. And there were some 2,862 extraterrestrial humans. They were from 12 different races. And they were here for an 11-year period. From 1975 to 1988, they were from Lyra, Vega, the Pleiaren system, and from neighboring stars. You know, one interesting neighboring star is Tau Ceti. It's about 11 light years away, and it has two planets in it, in the inhabitable zone, and our scientists recognize that, but they don't. You don't get much talk about that, do you? We've had a group of extraterrestrials that have been here on the Earth for a very, very long time, so long, something like 180,000 years. You can almost call them human, or Earth humans, I should say, at this time. They are the Hyperboreans, and they had a base within Mount Shasta. Did they leave or not? I asked Marianne from Switzerland, and she said she probably thought they did leave. There was, for a while, a small city in Mount Shasta, and there were a blonde, blue-eyed people that lived there for 180,000 years. They lived originally up in the North Polar regions, which was a beautiful, warm climate in the ancient past. There were also another group of extraterrestrial humans called the Hasters that lived in the North Atlantic. And they had an undersea base there for a long time. There are about 7.5 million human civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy. There are 79 pure human races that were originally created by creation. And now there are so many human races out there in the universe that it would have to be expressed by a number with 63 zeros. And the lifespans of human beings on other worlds can be thousands and thousands of years. Here on the Earth, our lifespans are very stunning, about 100 years if everything goes well. The diversity of size of different human beings is incredible. You can have 16-inch tall people and 40-foot tall people. So human, what is human is very varied. The creational universal consciousness is the natural production of its own evolution. Remember, creation is not perfect. And we see that so much today in the way nature works in a very beautiful and fantastic way, but it is not perfect. It's evolving. It's trying to perfect itself. It takes eons and eons for it to do that. The creation is universal self-awareness. There are 10 to the 49th power individual universes. Our universe is not the only one. There, for example, is something called the Tao universe, which is our parallel sister universe, where Asket's people live now. And the highest form of creation in all of these universes is called the Absolute Absolutum. So we have to understand that the love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing would be able to exist. And the individual, every person should be aware that he exists only because of the love of creation, and that he carries this love inside him. And all of nature and its indescribable splendor is the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. And the laws of creation are wonderfully arranged, and people should always come up against its radiating love. You see, in fact, love is the purpose of all existence. And love is very logical. Love is not the affective love that we have today, this romantic love. Nature, what is nature? Nature can be defined as a natural world that exists without human beings or civilization. Trees, animals, mountains, rivers. The German word for creation is Schöpfung, and the German word for splendor is Pracht. Splendor can be a great and impressive beauty. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal was created in love by creation. And each creation exists according to the same law of love. Every life, all life, has a certain kind of perfection to it, even though the whole system is not perfected yet. It's still evolving. Creation is still evolving. And the one thing the humans cannot do is to turn away from love, because the infinite love of creation that connects all life. And because in all life, this love lies hidden. And love is the highest principle in all creation. It's the number one principle. So the thing you should be doing is to live and help live. And this will be an interesting balance and a hard thing to do. And you'll find that Sometimes when you help, it can cause complications. And it'll be interesting to see how you experience that. What is love again? Let's talk a little bit more. Love is reverence, first of all. It's the fundamental element of love is reverence. So you revere something. You revere a person, or you revere an animal for its, you know, wonderful personality, or you revere a plant for its great beauty. And this is the kind of love that won't be unstable. When you have reverence for a person, when you have reverence for an animal, true reverence, and not putting something up on an unrealistic pedestal, then that kind of love is stable. This is the kind of love that will never weaken. It will never become cold. It will never transform into hate. It will never be annihilated. This is the love that's based on respect and reverence is not emotion-based. If you feel your love becoming emotion-based, this is a false form of love. One of the things to look out for is fluctuations in intensity of this love. And this, if you're involved in false love, then false love can transform into rage and hatred. If you're finding yourself swinging into rage and hatred, that's because you're expressing a false form of love. You'll have to reexamine yourself and try to correct that behavior. Remember, we're always working to be neutral. Neutral, positive. If you're raging, if you have hatred, you're not neutral. You're not neutral, positive. We all should be functioning within wisdom-conditioned love. It's a harmonious state of absolute connectedness with all things and indestructible. This is an indestructible kind of love. Genuine love is constant. It's independent of what you think about a person in terms of their appearance, their age, their personality. And Billy explains that the kind of love I'm describing is essential for all evolution and for all life. True love is a conglomerative form of, again, the fine spiritual perception that I was describing earlier, the Empfindung. It's not built on emotions. It's this fine spiritual, fine fluidal perception. Such perception comes from respectful, concentrated observation. You're observing a person, you're observing nature, and you're eventually getting to reverence. And this kind of knowledge that I'm describing, and this wisdom, it is acquired through meditative concentration on the reality of the thing. And this will experience itself in love. So you have to develop the ability to exercise concentrated observation. And that's something that's very, very hard for us Earth humans to possess. It takes practice. In any case, I'm glad you all were with us. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Thanks for stopping by and have a great week. Bye-bye.